ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय अन्यथा
म्रियमानस्य
म्रियमानस्य
नासुचे
नासुचे
विशाली पथे वैकुंठ
वैकुंठ
नाम
नाम
ग्रहणम्
ग्रहणम्
जीवा
जीवा
वक्तुम्
वक्तुम्
विहरहति
विहरहति
अन्यथा म्रियमानस्य
अन्यथा म्रियमानस्य
नासुचेर्विशालीपते
नासुचेर्विशालीपते
वैकुंठनामग्रहणम्
वैकुंठनामग्रहणम्
जिह्वा वक्तुम् विहरहति
जिह्वा वक्तुम् विहरहति
अन्यथा म्रियमानस्य
अन्यथा म्रियमानस्य
नासुचेर्विशालीपते
नासुचेर्विशालीपते
वैकुंठनामग्रहणम्
वैकुंठनामग्रहणम्
जिह्वा वक्तुम् विहरहति
जिह्वा वक्तुम् विहरहति
अन्यथा म्रियमानस्य
अन्यथा म्रियमानस्य
नासुचेर्विशालीपते
नासुचेर्विशालीपते
वैकुंठनामग्रहणम्
वैकुंठनामग्रहणम्
जिह्वा वक्तुम् विहरहति
जिह्वा वक्तुम् विहरहति
अन्यथा
अन्यथा
अदरवाइज
अदरवाइज
म्रियमानस्य
म्रियमानस्य
of a person who is just ready for death
of a person who is just ready for death
na
na
not
not
asuche
asuche
most unclean
most unclean
Vrishali Pate,
Vrishali Pate,
the keeper of a prostitute,
the keeper of a prostitute,
Vaikuntha,
Vaikuntha,
of the Lord of Vaikuntha,
of the Lord of Vaikuntha,
Namagrahanam,
Namagrahanam,
the chanting of the holy name,
the chanting of the holy name,
Jihwa,
Jihwa,
the tongue,
the tongue.
Vaktum,
Vaktum,
to speak,
to speak.
Iha,
Iha,
in this situation,
in this situation.
Arahati,
Arahati,
is able,
is able.
Translation: Were it not for my past devotional service, how could I, a most unclean keeper of a prostitute, have gotten an opportunity to chant the holy name of Vaikunthapati when I was just ready to die? Certainly, it could not have been possible. Purport. The name Vaikunthapati, which means the master of the spiritual world, is not different from the name Vaikuntha. Ajamil, who is now a realized soul, could understand because of his past spiritual activities and devotional service. He had gotten this opportunity to chant the holy name of Vaikunthapati in his horrible condition at the time of death. So then many very interesting points come up here with what Ajamil has said here. There's points for inspiration that we see that the Lord, he is taking care of the devotee. It means this devotee has done service and the Lord will not forget him. The Lord's in the heart. The Lord has created this whole material world just to establish a facility for the living entity to go back to Godhead. No other purpose. Means, because the Lord wants to rectify, therefore the material world has been created. If it was a matter of someone has gone against the Lord, so Lord being so pleased, displeased, then he could just, you know, obliterate the living entity. Means he has created him. He can also destroy him. He has that freedom. But Prabhupada points out that the Lord doesn't, because the living entities, being parts and parcels of the Lord, are very dear to him. So he creates this whole material world just for the purpose to bring the living entity back to Godhead, to reform him. Right? So this is a, when a government maintains prisons, this is a means of reformation. Because otherwise, if they don't like, they can just kill the people. I mean, it's going on all over the place. So just that they keep a formal form of punishment in this way, so that one can be trained and rectified, then shows that there is some higher purpose, some higher ideas. So Krishna maintains this whole material world, one quarter of the cosmic creation, just for this purpose. Therefore, if anyone for a moment does some devotional service, Krishna won't let him go. That's it. He's finished. Material life is finished. It's just a matter of time. You know, if it's some births, this birth, many births, but in some time the Lord will take one. So we see here that the Lord from the within the heart has inspired Ajamiya to name his son Narayana. And this is coming from his past association. He associated with very high quality Brahmins and devotees and this. He has performed service. This is a very essential point in this whole story. Generally we think, okay, just the time of death you chant the holy name, that is the point of this being established. That's why this story is. You think, what's the story of Ajamiya? Yes, at the time of death you chant the Lord's name, you'll be saved. That will be generally the answer. But actually, the whole question by Parikshit Maharaj is, what is wrong with material atonement? Why Sukadeva is not recommending material atonement? So then, here, the story of Ajamil is to prove that material atonement doesn't do anything for you. But the spiritual atonement, by engaging in service and by lamenting one's pitiable condition, that is the real atonement. That's the reason it comes up. It's an interesting point. It's when there's an answer to a point, it's always good to know what the question was also. So then the context is seen in its fullness. Of course, this does not in any way reduce the point that if you chant the name at the time of death, then you will be saved. But the point is that to go through some other system of purification is not practical, because it does nothing. Means from material desire, you do all kinds of nonsense activities. So now, if we remove the desire, we remove the nonsense activities. Atonement will simply remove the reaction to that. I've done some nonsense, then I'm going to get a reaction. So by the atonement, I get rid of that reaction. So actually, it's cheating. So material atonement is cheating, because I get rid of the reaction, but I didn't get rid of the desire, so I'm going to do it again. So I haven't actually corrected myself. It looks good on the surface. It's a good presentation that something serious has happened. We've done something. We've set an example. We've showed the people, this won't go on. But actually, nothing has been shown. Maybe for today, at this time, in this place, this circumstance, or the particular living entities that are around, we've done something. But what is that in comparison with the spiritual life, the spiritual realm, spiritual process? That is reality. So what happens today in this place, in this country, or even on this planet, is insignificant. One quarter of the cosmic creation is in the material world. And we're in one little planet, in one little universe of unlimited universes. So it's of no real consequence. Because the soul will go on. Next life, the same soul will be doing the same nonsense because the same material desire is there. So it's being pointed out, this is the real process of atonement. We want to know how to atone for something. We see it here. We perform service to the Lord in good association, and we look at very seriously who we are, what we've done. We see Ajamiya. He is lamenting that I had very nice, I had my parents, they raised me as a nice Brahmin, They were old. He was the only child, and he left them. He went against the rule that he is supposed to take care of the old people and women. So that was his mother and his father. Not only that, he was married, duly married, to a very nice, qualified, brahminical girl, very beautiful, very dutiful, chaste, and he left her to live with a prostitute. So we can see his activities are not very wonderful. You know, if we bring up now, okay, we have this devotee, you know, he's dumped his parents, nice devotional parents. He has a wonderful, chaste wife. He's dumped her. And now he's living with a prostitute. What should we do with him? Right? You know, so many things. Okay, beat him, throw him out, you know, string him up. You know, these would be... But what is Sukadeva Goswami says? No, get him to chant the holy name. Because if he chants the holy name, he'll actually be saved. So if we want to save the person, they have to do devotional service. If we just want to feel good ourselves, okay, I'm going to all the trouble to follow all the principles very nicely, and here this other nonsense is having a good time and not following him, so I will feel good if this person gets some good physical punishment. I can be satisfied, okay, at least I get, there's some benefit for following the morals. Like that. But now if we want to benefit the living entity, then it has to be in relation to some way to lift them. And they can only be lifted by devotional service. There's no other way. This is the whole point of this. We've already gone through now two chapters of the sixth canto to prove this point. There's nothing else that will uplift the living entity other than devotional service. Nothing. Even the most pious. Useless. Lord Brahma, I mean, Bhaktivinoda points out, I'd rather be a bug in the house of a devotee, because I'll hear the holy name, then to spend one very pious life as a non-devotee Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is the most pious living entity in the universe. And I would rather be a bug in the house of a devotee, because I'll get more devotional service than if I am Lord Brahma in this condition. So there is a vast difference between how the devotee views the material world and the devotional process and how the materialist sees it. Materialist just sees what goes on now. Everything's in relationship to the external energy, right? The body's made of external energy. And so when there's some punishment to that body, then I feel some substance has happened. But the devotees see that the gross body, the subtle body, it's all useless, it's all illusion, unless it's engaged in Krishna's service. That is the real atonement. We've been in the material world for so many lifetimes, and during these lifetimes we have been against the supremacy of the Lord, against serving the Lord, against doing anything for the Lord, chanting the Lord's holy name. So now, what's the real punishment for this living entity? He should do something he doesn't like to do. What's that? Chant the Lord's name, accept the Lord as the Supreme, render service to the Lord. This is the real punishment for the living entity. Not only that, it purifies him. And he becomes happy. So this devotional service is so nice that even though it's the supreme punishment for the materialistic living entity, it's happily performed. And it gives a wonderful reaction. So this is how the spiritualists view it. So this story then was told. Now we see that here, because devotional service is very special, this is another point that comes up, is we need to understand how wonderful and how special is devotional service. Because of the potency of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, because of the potency of this movement, then even despite this age of Kali, so many devotees have been made. And such a wonderful society has been put together, where everyone there's so many devotees. You know, you hear Narad Muni is going around himself, he comes, there's Yudhishthira here and there, he goes somewhere else, there's another devotee. You don't hear a big, you know, except for here, when this discussion of Bhagavatam, big groups of devotees coming together. Like that. So what Prabhupada has done, even in other ages, you don't see so much. And because of this, we become conditioned by this sense of goodness, and we think devotees, very common, devotional service, very easy. Prabhupada's books, you know, there's so many of them, you know, so they're easy. Every temple has them, everybody's house has them, every ashram has them. Very common, right? But that is the potency of Prabhupada and this mission. So we have to be very careful to not take it cheaply. Right? Prabhupada has flooded us with an ocean of devotional service and devotional opportunities. So we have to be careful not to take it cheaply, that this is just something ordinary. No, this is something so unique. Something so unique that such mercy has been given. We don't see it before. Example has been given before. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right? Nitya Siddha. Would like to read Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? He spends 6 years to find a copy. One copy he gets. You know, handwritten copy on palm leaves. 6 years. Right? Here, anytime you want to read, I mean, there's probably, you know, hundreds of copies in this project here. You know? So even if you don't have one in your room, you know, then you can go look. Now, would we look for 6 years? I think I want to read some Chaitanya Charitamrita. I go to my bookshelf, the book's not there. Now am I going to go look in other places or go here and there? Or am I going to say, okay, I won't read? You know. So, because we don't have that determination, it's been made so available. But then we have the tendency to maybe think it's very commonplace. But it's not. It's very special. So here, he is associated with devotees. Ajamiyo. He's associated with them. And by that associate, he's done service. And the Lord won't let that go. He won't forget it. We may forget. The Lord doesn't forget. Whatever has been done, then is the Lord doesn't forget. So the Lord never thinks or deserves him right. You know? Oh, they did this. Yeah, so he got this. Okay, yeah. That's all. You know? Now the Lord thinks is he's done some service. Now how to continue that? So the Lord is always thinking. So once devotional service is started, then the Lord takes care. As we see here, the Lord is taking care of Ajamiya. He's coming and arranging his life. The Yamadut does not understand. They just saw, here's a sinful person. He needs to be punished. So then they come. So the mistake here is not that the Yamadutas were supposed to come and then the Vishnudutas intervened. No, Vishnudutas were coming and the Yamadutas made the mistake. They didn't know what was going on. They misjudged. They just saw sinful activities, nonsense, goes to hell. They didn't notice the devotional activities. Just like sinful activities are substance, devotional activities, nice. You know? You do, you know, he chanted. One name, two names, right? Prabhupada mentioned, he called Narayan twice, right? He chanted two names and a lifetime of sin. So naturally, the lifetime of sin is the prominent feature. That's what should be given this main emphasis, main attention. But the Vishnudutas point out, no, the two names, even if it was one name, that would be more substance than all the nonsense he's done. Because why this life? We get caught up in what has happened this life. We've been here since time immemorial. So that's quite a few lifetimes of nonsense. Okay? Even if we take it, even we just are liberal, 50-50, 50% was pious, 50% was impious. Still, I mean, since time immemorial, it's quite a few lifetimes of nonsense. And if we've been through every species of life, I mean, it's not by, you know, helping old ladies across the street that you end up as a mosquito or something, or a worm, or an amoeba, you know? I mean, it's generally something not very wonderful, you know? It looks nice because it's running according to Krishna's direction, but if you actually think about the living entities and what they go through and their mentalities and what they like, you know, then it's not wonderful. So we've done all that. So that means we've done the sinful activities to deserve to take birth as that. So we're nobody's saints. Right? But by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, we've somehow or another come in contact with devotional service, and we're performing devotional service under the direction of the acharyas. That is the special thing. And that's what we should see. Then with that, then we can start to appreciate devotional service, the power of devotional service, the specialness of association with devotees. Then everything becomes very nice. Then we see here, just on application, like that. Oh, yeah. So now we see that's the positive side. Now, aside, how do you say, the philosophy and the inspirational side of it. Then we have the aspect here where Ajamil says, were it not for my past devotional service, how could I, a most unclean keeper of a prostitute, have gotten an opportunity to chant the holy name of Vaikunthapati when I was ready to die? So now he has performed, devotional service, and he has fallen from this. So now, this is important. One can fall from it because it's choice, it's desire. We sometimes have this uninformed opinion that the devotional service, once it is done, one can never fall. Once one advances, one cannot fall. Just the word fall means we've come down from a higher position. Right? If you fall, you have to be something. But if you're laying on the floor, you can't say you fell from laying on the floor onto the floor. You're already on the floor. So that means the higher you advance, the farther you can fall. So here, Ajamil. I mean, Ajamil was just some guy that was, you know, some bum living in the street, and he happened to chant the holy name, it wouldn't be such a sensational story. But here, qualified Brahmin, devotee, wonderful situation, left all that, nice devotional service, nice family, nice wife, nice social position, left all that for a degraded position. And still, he is something special. So this is something we have to understand for ourselves. Is that at every moment we have to be very introspective. We see here Ajamil, he hasn't been introspective since he was probably very young. Since the time he saw the low-class person with the prostitute when he was young. Since that time he hasn't been introspective one moment. He's totally just been absorbed in how to maintain this prostitute so she'll be pleased so that he can have more children. That's been his total absorption. So now we see he's looking at it. He sees I've gone against the devotional principles, against the religious principles. I've done so much nonsense. He's actually thinking and feeling this. By feeling this, he actually is. This is the real purification. He's lamenting what he has done. He is actually feeling bad. And this is due to understanding. It's not emotional. Emotions are happening, but this is on the spiritual platform. He's seeing that all these opportunities for devotional service, for proper behavior, I've left all that. And I've taken up this nonsense activity. So that is the purification. This is from the negative side, the holy name, and then this attitude. So this is the Trinada Pisuni Chena, Torora Pisuhishuna, Amani Namana Dena Kirtaniya Sadahari. Then he's able to chant. He's able to chant because what has happened? The Vishnu Dudas came. Now it said he's self-realized. Right? Now we would think, now he's done all this nonsense. How could he in a moment become self-realized? Such a nonsense rascal. So we've seen he's gone from being a nicely situated devotee to being a complete nonsense, and then from there becoming a self-realized person. This doesn't seem practical, right? It doesn't seem logical. He goes from a nice position to being an advanced devotee. or he goes from being degraded to he gets situated in devotional service. But here he goes from a nice position to a degraded position. From that degraded position, he goes straight to self-realization. Right? In other words, he continues from where he left off. The devotional service is not lost. Right? We see in his life, he's not offending the devotional principles, he's just left it. Therefore, when we leave devotional service, the sensual, we leave, then we can contaminate ourselves more. But we cannot, when we take up devotional service, again, we'll start where we left off. It's not that we go back to, You know, we continue from where we left off. So this is an important thing for us to see. And for Ajamil, he's seeing how much time he's wasted. He could have been serving the Lord. And he's feeling very bad about this. And that is what is actually purifying. And because of the intensity of the situation, he's thought about this very deeply. And this has brought about the self-realization. We must also understand self-realization is the platform from which there now we can start to seriously develop our love for Krishna. The platform of self-realization is very elevated for us. But if you look at it from the platform of prema, it still is not very significant. It's definitely, I say, it's significant, but it is not on the same platform as prema. We have to understand liberation, Brahma-bhuta, self-realization. These are at the threshold of where we make our serious choice to go towards Krishna or again go back into the material world. So this point is very elevated. But at the same time, it's still not the same as prema. We should not mix it. In the beginning stage, it's all advanced. Just like for a child, you know, who is just in the nursery school or in the kindergarten or first grade, then a child in high school is very elevated. Right? When you finish high school, then you have the qualification that now you can go on to serious higher education. Now you can go into your university and then postgraduate and come to PhD. If you don't finish the high school, then that opportunity is not there. So unless you come to liberation, prema is not, it's not open. But we also understand high school is not that elevated compared to graduate, postgraduate. So prema is then much higher, right? That's much higher. So when we understand that, it also puts things in perspective. We talk about, someone's self-realized, this, that. That is also, there's higher than that. So we have to be introspective and look at it. How does it apply to us? Where do I stand on this? Okay, I say one has to be like this, otherwise one cannot be considered, you know, respectable. But then where do I stand then? What is my position? How do I fit into this? You know, am I on that platform of self-realization? Am I on the platform of prema? Am I on the platform of attachment to Krishna? I'm actually attached to Krishna. Do I actually have a taste for chanting the holy name? Am I actually fixed in devotional service? Am I seriously, introspectively looking at all the anarthas in my heart and trying to figure out how to get rid of them by the direction of the acharyas? Or am I fixed in, am I seriously following the devotional process? Spiritual master has initiated me, he's given me the process. Am I following it very nicely? Maybe I'm not worried about the anarthas, but am I following it very nicely? Or am I associating nicely with devotees? Seriously understand devotees are wonderful, I should take their association, I'm avoiding offenses and all that. Or, okay, do I have faith? Do I have faith? Right? Now, we don't have an option below that. We've gone from the top to the bottom. So we can't go below that. Below that's non-devotional service. So then if we look at it in this way, we may think, well, I don't have much faith, and I don't really value the association devotees, take it seriously, and I don't really seriously practice, and I'm not at all introspective. You know, so then where does that leave us? Right? So in this way, then we have plenty to think about, worry about in that, in our own life. Right? The term is charity begins at home. So we can, our opinions for others, how they should behave, and this one, this, and that one, that, is nice, but first we should also just check our own position. How are we situated? How are we doing? You know? If we're in a position to help someone, to guide someone or support them, then okay, then it's natural. We can point out what's wrong, what's right, this and that. But if we're not, what is the use? We have enough work. All this ability to find, you know, some problem in someone else's devotional service, that's a good asset, to be able to point out what's wrong in someone's devotional service. But first we should apply it to ourselves. And when we've done that work very nicely, we're situated nicely. We can find our own very easily, and we're working on it. Then we're going to be qualified to help someone else. Right? Just like, let's say, I want to teach somebody, you know, math or puja. I first have to know the subject. I first have to be able to practice it. We were just reading the other day, Manu, he says that someone who knows the Veda, that is good. That is a serious start. But someone who understands how to apply the Veda in your life, that's better. That's better than the person who just has the knowledge. One who knows how to apply the knowledge is better than that. And he says better than that then is someone who actually can apply it, who does apply it. See, because there's people who know the theory but don't apply it. Then he said, and the best is someone who realizes the connection between themselves, the Lord, and the activity that they're doing. Right? Like that. So if I want to teach, then generally I should at least be on the level of knowing the theory of it. But if I really want to influence a person, I have to be practicing myself. Maybe I'm not realized, but at least if I'm practicing, I can get someone else to understand and practice. And by that practice, they'll become realized. So even though I may not be able to do, I can put them in a position at which they themselves can become realized. Right? Maybe they can't benefit from my realization, but at least they can benefit from their own. So now if I want to point out faults in someone else, I want to show them how their devotional life is not running properly, I should know what is the devotional process and be practicing it. So I should know how to find faults, right? I want to point out in the other person, this is your fault. So I have to bring it to the point of what Ajamil is doing. That Ajamil is seeing his fault and actually feeling, yes, I am at fault, rather than why you're criticizing. Ajamil is seriously thinking, yes, I am a nonsense. I've done all these things wrong. You know, he's not worried about his prestige and his ego and all these things like that, which is developed nicely. A keeper of a prostitute has a really good ego, right? And he's not worrying about that. He's just saying, I'm so useless. So when we are able to practice the ability to find fault and to feel bad about it to that actually corrects it, then we are a qualified teacher to point out and correct someone else. Otherwise, then it's not very good. If we are just speaking, criticizing, but we ourselves are not practicing, then we're not a good teacher. It's not good. It doesn't get the result. As we see, devotees are critical of other devotees. The atmosphere is not going up. The devotees aren't thinking, wow, thank you for pointing out the fault, and now I'm becoming serious, and they're serious. And no, we're just this one criticizing, that one criticizing, going back and forth. And then devotees are going, what's going on, you know, like that. Because we're not practicing what we're trying to help others in. Right? Prabhupada would mention in the book distributors, he'd ask them, you know, have you read the books? And they say, no, we just distribute them. Prabhupada would say, well, how you can distribute if you don't know what's in them? Right? You're going to someone and say, here, buy this. but then they want to know what's in it, what it is. So if you're convinced, then they buy more. I was practically seeing in one temple, they decided, Prabhupada said, we should read the books. One is just any devotee should read. And two, as book distributors, we must read these books. So they took 2 hours out. They used to go book distribution 8 hours a day. And they were a very good book distribution temple, always high in the charts. They decided, okay, we will take 2 hours, because they couldn't find another time. 2 hours out of our book distribution. We'll only go out 6 hours. And in 2 hours, we'll read every day, religiously. And then naturally you would think, okay, there's going to be a loss in books going out and this and that, but at least we're following Prabhupada's order. So what did they find? They read for 2 hours when they went out, because they were more convinced and enthusiastic about these books are really worth reading. When they went out, they did more books in those 6 hours than they did in 8 hours. Because they were convinced. They were following. They're saying, take this book, read it, you'll be happy. And then I don't read the book. So now I take the book, I read it, I'm happy, now I'm coming and giving to you. You take it, you'll be happy. So, like that. This is the point. We're over time, I take it.
No.
Oh, I thought you were checking the watch. So, this is there. And then the point there, we touched on it. We have to actually understand the seriousness of the principle of iron and fire. Srila Prabhupada's, Krishna's, the Acharya's definition of absolute, that the living entity who is in contact with Krishna consciousness is in the fire of Krishna consciousness, therefore is in the fire of absolute, is absolute. Maybe a little absolute. Right? We chant one Hare Krishna a day. For that one time we're chanting, we're absolute. Right? If we chant two, like Ajamil, then we're that much absolute. But we have to understand this principle. Otherwise, if we want to try to apply the teachings that Ajamil is giving and is giving here, we won't be able to do it. Because otherwise, how do you go from being not a devotee to this life? Ajamil was born in a family of devotees. Then he left that, became a total absolute nonsense. Then he took up devotional service on the top, very high platform. How do you explain it? Because morally, you cannot explain it. Christians can explain it, Jews can explain it, Muhammad can explain it. You know, New Age, you know, moralists, no one can explain it. And there'll be a great problem. How do you explain this? How do you explain someone going from not devotional service, born in the family of devotees, absolute nonsense, to realized devotee? Unless we accept Prabhupada's, the Acharya, Krishna's definition of what is transcendental, meaning iron and fire. Because the iron is in the fire, it's hot. The iron is not in the fire, it's not hot. And at any time, the iron can be put in the fire or taken out of the fire. When we understand this, somehow the devotional process and association with devotee and how to view devotees who are seriously practicing or deviate becomes very easy and clear, because we understand iron and fire. Otherwise, if we try to apply some moralistic thing, we'll be frustrated because it doesn't make sense. Right? Christians, that's it, finished. Like that, you know, the Mohammedans follow the same thing. Jews are a little more liberal. Everyone makes a mistake, right? Even Moses made a mistake. Everybody has a bad day. You know? But still, you can't be too bad. You know? But otherwise, we can't work it out. It just can't be done. So only when we look with the transcendental vision, because we're dealing with transcendence, we're not dealing with anything mundane. We're not dealing with anything mundane. We're dealing with transcendental devotional. We're trying to take devotional service and fit it into the realm of morality. No, we have to take morality and fit it into the realm of devotional service. This is the real thing. Means we don't take devotional service and try to figure out how it fits into social context and social, you know, development and morality and that. We try to take how does social development, morality, social structure and all fit into devotional service. Then it becomes perfect. Because Krishna says, whatever is in contact with him becomes sat, or eternal. He doesn't say, you take spiritual and whatever you put it in contact with, according to that, then that becomes spiritual. No, you have to take the... He doesn't say, you take the fire and put it inside the iron, then the iron becomes fire. No, he says, you take the iron and put it in the fire, then it becomes iron. Very important point. We don't adjust devotional service to fit material values. We adjust material values to fit the spiritual. Like that. It depends how you see it. Same thing. Like that. So here then Ajamil is appreciating this opportunity that he's gotten, and he understands this only by the grace of the devotional service, which means only by the grace of Guru and Krishna. Prabhupada points out in the last verse that but Guru Krishna Prasadipai Bhakti Lata Bij. So that means he was associating. Means unless Guru has appreciated, Krishna's mercy comes through the Guru. The Kripa Siddhi comes through the Guru, not Kripa Siddhi. Kripa Siddhi? Yeah, mercy. The mercy comes through the Vaishnavas. So he's received it from the Vaishnavas. So that means he wasn't just somebody, anybody. He was a devotee who had come in contact with sampradayic devotees and was situated within the sampradayic process. So it's very applicable to our present context. Otherwise, you think, hey, he's just a Brahmin, he fell down from being a Brahmin, big deal. What has it got to do with us? No, he was a bona fide devotee, and he fell from that. So he understands, the only reason I've been saved is because of this devotional service, because of the devotees, because of the Lord, only have I been saved. Nothing else. My money didn't give me security, right? He was not a poor man. He had 10 children, they didn't give him security. You know, he had a, you know, somewhat faithful wife as long as he brought in the money. You know, he had a house, you know, he wasn't out on the road somewhere. Like that, he was independent, right? He was not working under the temple. He's not anymore, right? You know? So it means all the things that we think are going to give us security. Nothing gave him nothing. The Yamadutas are right there with their dogs barking and everything, and their chains and their Harleys and everything. And nothing could save him. But because of the devotional service saved him. The Vishnadutas only came because of his devotional service. So the devotional service saved. So now in this realized state, he's seeing all this. And seeing how I was a fool, I left devotional service, I left the real thing, and I went after these mundane pursuits. And now he's lamenting that very seriously, very deeply. And because of this, he is now self-realized. And we'll see he will progress to actually become an advanced devotee, that he becomes the platform of prema and goes back to Godhead. Right? So this is the we end here. Any questions, comments, or
questions? We see the story of Ajamil, that although he was sinful, he didn't commit aparad.
Yeah.
But in Kali Yuga, because of our lack of culture, all the time we find out in that situation, you tend to be critical and supposed to commit aparad. So how does aparad complicate?
Yeah, so aparad makes it much more difficult because aparad can remove our opportunities for service. See, if we're sinful, because we're not interested, then the opportunity is not there. It means Krishna just gives us what we desire. It means Ajamil, he saw a prostitute. And this Shudra was associating with the prostitute. So he became attracted to that. And much more passion and all that. He had a very nice wife, but you know, I guess it was just not the passion attracted him. And then he gave that up. But that was his desire. So Krishna, through the modes of nature, his desire was fulfilled. But then when he's now performed devotional service, has become understood, heard, by hearing from the devotees, from the Vishnu Dutas, he's regained his original position. I was just noticing on the top of the Sankirtan building, they just put some little, like, gazebo or something. So then he's taken up, how do you say? He's again become resituated. So where he left off, he was in good association. He left that good association. Then he regained it by his devotional service, by again taking up devotional service. And then from that, he has progressed and now become self-realized. So it's desire. So nothing's lost. But then when we offend, then Krishna actually removes the opportunities for devotional service. Because when we... See, he has not offended devotees where he can hear from them transcendental subject matter. He respects them. Now, when the Vishnu Dutas came, he's respecting the Vishnu Dutas. And therefore, he hears from them and he advances. But then... If we offend devotees, devotees are the source of our inspiration, they're the source of the Lord's mercy, then Krishna will take away that source of mercy. Then what's our opportunity? So it's our desire. So the offense is still only according to our desire. Right? Krishna is not punishing us, it's our desire. We just don't understand what the reaction is to our desire. You know? You take prasad once, it's equal to... It's basically offensive. But Rupa Goswami says, just to give an idea, you take prasad, it's equal to 10,000 ashwamedha yagyas. Right? So, there's no king in the cosmic creation that can perform 10,000 ashwamedha yagyas in one lifetime. They're working hard to get 100. It means 100 is possible, though it's the maximum endeavor. Absolute maximum endeavor. It's about 100. So he's saying 10,000. Right? That's so much. So much more. It's 100 times what anybody can do. And just taking Bishad once, so we don't understand what comes, the piety. So therefore, if you go against that, then what is the impiety that comes? So one has to understand. So the only way to rectify that is also by respecting the devotees, taking up the same thing. The only process is to devotional service. Become situated in the association of devotees in devotional service. That's it. If you're morally improper, the only way to actually rectify is devotional service. If you're spiritually not properly situated, the only way to rectify is devotional service. So, Prabhupada says, the solution to all problems is devotional service. Moral, spiritual, emotional, intellectual, sensual, any problem, the only solution is devotional service. Nothing else. So that's to be gained. So it makes it... One should be very careful to avoid offenses, because otherwise it just complicates things a lot. It makes progress very difficult. Right? Means Ajamil has forgotten his taste for the holy name. But offenses make you lose your taste. That's the difference. But the process is the same. By again chanting... By lamenting for what one's done, like this, understanding the philosophy, and trying to situate yourself properly in advance.
You have your whole lecture. The word that came, a legal word kept coming to my mind.
Dealings means how how you buy something, sell something.
How the Vishnu Dudas dealt with Arjuna, how Krishna dealt with Arjuna. I find it proportionately indicative of one's maturity in Krishna consciousness. Of course, we would expect that someone in a position of leadership would be one who is Krishna conscious and, of course, deals. But aside from that, even how we deal with each other is such an important thing, and not divorced from our maturity and realization in Krishna consciousness. One other aspect is that you mentioned, Srimati Mataji, you mentioned the aparad, and you elaborated, I think, as far as I understood, from the Ajumil, because he didn't make aparad, then he, and because he exhibited regret, and because he remained a sincere devotee, Krishna twice in Bhagavad Gita mentions that, the 18th chapter and maybe in the 9th verse, that one who remains a sincere devotee, even having, you know, even he commits abominable activities, which Ajumil did. So I was thinking of its relationship to Krishna consciousness, but also when she mentioned aparad, not only was Ajumil free from aparad, but those that dealt with him didn't commit aparad to him, which was, you know, you talk about perfect answers, perfect questions. This was perfect dealings from both sides. So I think that how we deal with each other, you know, indicates, you know, I don't think it's very important to talk so much about diminished gurus, but to wonder where is diminished Krishna consciousness. So this is a perfect example of a perfect dealing, you know, an all-rounder perfect dealing. Mm.
Yes. Yeah, very good.
This part where it says the standard of the devotee should be actually very regretful and lament his previous sometimes. But in for my own case, I don't feel very regretful in past activities, because even if I was pious, it's at first I've been a little bit religious, but still I wasn't, how should I how can I make myself feel bad about my past?
Well, we can look at it from different angles. If looking over all your past activities, you don't find anything bad to lament about, then we could understand that maybe you have already come to the, you are already very advanced personality, and you've come to the platform, very advanced stages of devotional service. So in this lifetime, you see nothing to lament about because there hasn't been. So one could also look at it from that angle.
If not, maybe we can arrange a confession.
Oh. Yes. Means basically we just have to see is any, I mean, it comes down to there's the gross and there's subtle. And we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his songs. He shows all levels of this lamentation. Because it's not just on the sinful. This is showing like the lowest level. And many times, this is sometimes we have a tendency to forget. It means all levels we do. The ego is such we just don't want to admit we're wrong. So here it's, you know, I was victim of circumstances, or, you know, devil made me do it, or whatever it is, you know. Then, but here we see on the lowest level that he is seen according to the dharma and everything. So it's even, you know, just basic fundamentals of human existence. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also shows that. You know, but then a step above this is just, even we're doing everything nice, but we're not thinking of Krishna in the basic sense. Like Bhaktivinoda, I grew up, you know, I was remembering the Lord in the womb, and he came to me and I said I would serve him, and when I left the womb, then, you know, so many people were giving attention and pinching and poking and laughing and this and that, and I became bewildered, I forgot. Then I grew up into a, you know, handsome young man and became educated and that, and then I wanted to take my education and show people how educated I was. And after establishing my prestige, then I worked very hard, you know, got wealth, and in this way expanded my life, and then I totally forgot. And he says, and enjoyed my senses, and now when I'm old, you know, the senses don't work, the brain, the mind is not working, and I'm completely useless. Now I'm seeing, now I understand I should be doing devotional service, and I'm lamenting that now I'm so useless I can't even do devotional service nicely. Because I'm old, what can I do? You know, so that platform. And then he gives higher platforms, just subtle things. You know, he says, when will the lust, anger, greed, envy, all these different things, the six enemies go? And then it'll just go subtler and subtler. Just even a moment we forget Krishna, we feel bad, right? The gopis are lamenting that they blinked their eyes and for what's it called, a nimisha, you know, that length of blinking an eye, that they can't see Krishna. So they can't do the service. The service they want to do is see Krishna, can't do it. They're feeling bad. Of course, in this state, then they're blaming Lord Brahma. But the point is that the one can't do service. So in the beginning stage is that we're sinful. Then it's just we're doing pious activities, but we're not doing it in relationship to Krishna. The next is our devotional activities aren't up to par. So in any stage, there's always something that we can see, create, because Krishna appreciates that. Krishna appreciates that lamentation, that humility. It attracts him. It means he, God as a person, he is attracted by this humility. It attracts him. This humility and connection with Krishna consciousness. It really attracts Krishna's attention. And that devotee becomes very dear. And Krishna wants to shower all mercy. It's very natural, you know. Child takes something, then if you talk to the child and he says he didn't do it, or you know, he understands, okay, he didn't do it, but he doesn't really feel bad about it, you know, you're in a mood, he should be corrected. We should try to instruct him, even if you're, you know, depending on situation, and maybe more harsh and maybe more harsh chastisement, or just, you know, some firm instruction. But something is there. But now if the child himself feels, you know, I stole this and I feel very bad, I shouldn't have done it, immediately you just feel compassion. All the feelings of instruction, this, that, because it's already been attained. Whatever is done. So in the same way, Krishna being the most perfect person, then when there is this sense of humility and sense of lament, he is so attracted by that. To him, everything, the whole material existence is written off. To him, it's like that's perfection. You have understood the whole thing. So now he's ready to give you pure devotional service. So that aspect of lamentation is it's part of the process of, you know, means that we seriously are supposed to start at Narta Nivritti. That's the meaning. The Bhajana Kriya and Narta Nivritti are the same stage. Nishta, it's the same. All from Bhajana Kriya on, it's the same. The difference is whether it's Anishta or Nishta, whether it's unsteady or steady. Unsteady means it's still a Nartas. So there's two stages of unsteady Bhajana Kriya. One is where we're just practicing and getting adjusted with it. Like we just start, we just get our initiation, we're just getting adjusted with following all the different things and, you know, worshipping the deity and doing all our activities. But we're basically unconscious of the finer aspects. We're dealing with the gross aspects. Then the second stage, where we call it Anartha Nivritti instead of Bhajana Kriya, is when we seriously start to see what are the anarthas in the heart. What I am doing that keeps me from advancing. So that's still within Anishta. So because they're the major portion. But then if we see them and we try to tackle them according to the devotional process, then we see that that starts to go down. And when that gets down, then it starts to be called Nishta, then we become fixed. So in our devotional service and our practice, we don't come to the stage of being introspective and trying to understand what is wrong in our devotional service, then we won't actually come to the position of being fixed. Like that. So it's very important. So that is what the acharyas try to bring out in their songs. We see in their teachings, in their prayers. Ajamil here is that point. So we'll end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.